Amazing grace, how sweet that dunk was last night. Welcome to the Pick Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, Skyping. You were not killed by DeAndre Jordan. Brandon Knight was. How's it going? I'm pumped up by this dunk.
I'm going to miss you, Brandon.
Oh, I miss him.
Brandon was a good man.
I miss him so much.
God, you know, I flipped off the game because, you know, it'd been a long 2 days, and I flipped off the game and can't catch everything. I was like, okay, Clippers, Pistons, I'm passing on this one, and I know never to do that because it's the Clippers.
Yeah.
And I start hearing my tweet deck important mentions notification going off, like constantly, and I'm like, what is going on? So I pause my Sonic the Hedgehog video game.
As you do.
And I'm like, what? What did DeAndre do? And then I saw it, and like I cringed so much I almost flipped myself over the couch.
I had been at an atrocious Timberwolves game. talked to a couple people and came home, and I was just hanging out on the couch with my lady, and we were watching. She was watching some ungodly thing on TV that I had no interest in. So I'm just like playing solitaire on my phone and kind of scrolling through Twitter, and I see like this reaction of DeAndre Jordan, DeAndre Jordan, DeAndre Jordan. I'm like, ah, whatever. So then I get on the league pass on my phone and I rewind about a minute. And I'm thinking, this is probably going to be a cool dunk, but it's no big deal. And then I saw it and I was like, I was like, pause the DVR. Like, I need you to see this. And she was blown away by it. Like, just everything. Like, everything about it. The kid's reaction. Blake Griffin's reaction. Vinny Del Negro trying to hold them back on the bench like they're going to get suspended.
Yes.
For running on the court because it was, you know, it was a fight that Brandon Knight lost, apparently. Greg Monroe's look. The DeAndre Jordan, I just murdered someone face. Like, everything. Everything was enjoyable. The memes afterwards were great. The jokes were fantastic. The only thing that bothered me is that you get that really, just, you know, it's coming, the reaction of, well, it wasn't that great. He dunked on a guard, or, oh, can we stop talking about this? Like, there's always that kind of blowback against it that I just want to be like, teach me how to be cool like you guys to not care about anything. And I'm the guy that doesn't care about anything. But there's moments like that where it's just an awesome dunk that should, like, really energize you. And people are saying, like, this is why I watched the NBA. That is why you watched the NBA. That was a cool dunk. That was awesome.
It's one where it's like, you know, one, why does it bother you if people enjoy it?
Right.
And two, like, this is why we do things for fun. Like, this is the whole point, is for stuff like this to be like, oh my god, it's so amazing. You know, and if you don't think that's that great, well, you're an idiot, but that's fine. You know?
Like, you know? No, there are always times where I'm like, hey, ranking fast food burgers is kind of dumb because people have different tastes or whatever. There is no different taste for a dunk like that. There is no, like, oh, that's your opinion. Like, that dunk's awesome.
That dunk's just awesome. And somebody mentioned, they were like, well, yeah, but you killed Myers Leonard for celebrating over Andre Miller. And I was like, well, one, Andre Miller can't jump. Two, he's 46 years old. And three, you know, he kind of got him sideways a little bit and then screamed at him. DeAndre didn't even really do much. He just, like, landed and then walked off. No. And then he turned around and was like, and you realize, he was like, oh, God, did I just end Brandon Knight's career?
Then there was, the looking game was great, but the fact that he doesn't stare down Knight, like, he knows he's finished the job, like, fatality, it's over, the round is over, like, he's got a flawless victory, like, he knows it, and that's the cool part. And the Myers Leonard thing, I actually love Myers Leonard's reaction. I think we talked about it, and I said it was hilarious. I didn't like everybody else's reaction to it because it seemed like a boring dunk to me, but there was nothing boring about this.
I want him to go out. I want DeAndre to go out and buy a new suit today. I want him to start buying suits for everyone he dunks on.
it's like in Major League where Willie Mays Hayes pins up a pair of batting gloves every time he steals a base.
I want him to go buy a new suit, and this one needs to be black with a black shirt and a black tie.
Yeah,
because he's going to a funeral. And I gotta say this one. Okay, it's not like Brandon Knight charged in from out of nowhere to try and challenge DeAndre Jordan. He got caught.
Yeah, for sure.
But Andre Miller in that situation is running his little ass the other way. And Brandon Knight's like, well, I better make an effort here.
That's the funny. Well, people are like, oh, he's a foot taller. He's got 50 pounds. He should dunk on him. You know what? Don't jump.
Don't jump.
You can choose not to jump. You can just stand there. You still get dunked on, but it doesn't look as bad. He jumped, got slammed into the ground by the momentum, and then the ball came down and hit him in the back of the head off the bounce. That was mean.
That was just mean.
Yeah, that was mean. I don't even blame DeAndre.
Life's been mean to Brandon Knight this year.
Yeah, I don't blame DeAndre for that. I blame the ball. The ball clearly was headhunting there.
And I gotta say, though, you know, he can test. He has this happen to him. He left the locker room without talking to media, and I don't blame him. I was like, do not talk to media. Like, I'm always like, you better talk. No, go home.
And he had a funny reaction on Twitter. Like, he's able to joke about it.
The tweet was amazing.
Yeah, he said, what do you say, they didn't have the Clippers throw lobs in the scouting report?
The scouting report didn't have the Clippers throw lobs.
Yeah, that's funny. Like, he's able to laugh at it. It's just basketball. He got caught. And that's the fun part about it, is that he didn't, like, have this attitude. There were some Pistons fans, and this is just a natural reaction, some Pistons fans defending him for challenging and blah, 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 which is, you know, that's predictable. But
it doesn't change the fact that he just got absolutely murdered.
Yeah, he got obliterated.
Like, he just got murdered.
What was your favorite? Now, I've never seen The Lion King, but I do know, like, the things of The Lion King. Bo Cherny's Photoshop with Simba.
Yeah.
Like, concerned about Brandon Knight was hilarious, and the chalk outline was hilarious. I don't know which one I like better, though. I think I like the Simba one.
You should check out the one that Miles Brown retweeted this morning. There's one where a casket drops on top of him.
Oh, no.
Flowers.
Oh, no.
And I died this morning again.
Oh, man.
I've seen some funny stuff on this, but I died again.
Yeah.
I did one with the audio from Bane and Batman and the fight where...
I listened to that before I went to bed, and something I don't understand, I've only seen a totally legal bootleg of The Dark Knight Rises, but then I did buy it, and I haven't watched it since, but I've never seen it in a theater or anything, and I've only seen it the once, and it wasn't great quality. But does the Bane voice sound like an auto-tuned Sean Connery impersonation?
It does. It does a lot.
Yeah, it's very distracting to me.
Yeah, that's a very good comparison. What's sad is they actually had to fix it up to make it be like they had to go rework all the audio to make him sound more clear, and they still came out like that.
I just assumed that before it talked like Christopher Lloyd in Who Framed Roger Rabbit when he becomes a cartoon. It's like, and he talked like this!
I'm trying to think what my favorite moment was of the dunk.
Everything. Everything's the favorite moment of that dunk. That dunk was awesome.
Vinny Del Negro holding back is one of my favorites.
That was hilarious. And there's a great photo of the bench reaction with DeAndre kind of like screaming into the air that there will be a post. By the time this podcast is up, it'll be up on CBSSports.com. But there's a great shot where it really looks like Blake Griffin is just running away.
Yep.
Like, just running away from everything. Like, that's a great reaction. And then I think Arash Markazi tweeted out quotes after the game where someone asked DeAndre, where does this rank for your dunks? And Blake interjected and said, don't be stupid. This is the best.
Like, don't lie. This is number one.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I mean, it's just... Yeah, you dream of those kind of dunks. And then we see a lot of those near things. And then usually it's like he'll miss back rim.
Right.
And just, you know, he got clean and he got rims, so you don't have to care about any of that. And it's just, although I will say, the thing that drives me crazy more than anything else is that it's still only worth 2 points. I hate that. It's just, that is worth, like, what DeAndre Jordan did in terms of, like, the cultural zeitgeist is more than any, like, shot that Tim Duncan may have ever made outside of making a three-pointer against the Suns. Like,
yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's just 2 points. I'm sure that Kyle Singler mid-range jumper got the exact same reaction from social media world.
Yeah, and I mean, and this is what I talk about a lot with, look, there's two NBAs to me. There's, you know, competing for a championship and the will of winners and the thrive of competition and all of that, which is fine, and I buy into it, and then the playoffs are coming, and it's exciting. But there's also, like, the mid-March game where, oh my God, do you remember when DeAndre Jordan dunked on Brandon Knight and killed him?
Right. Like, I said last night, I was like, the Pistons could win this game by 50. Nobody would remember.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to remember the result of that. I don't even know what the final score was. I don't think it was a close game, but I don't remember. All I remember is that dunk.
And, like, Tracy McGrady is kind of like the icon for that. Like, yeah. Of, like, those moments, you know? And
every time he dunked on Sean Bradley.
If the Timberwolves never win a championship, if Ricky Rubio never wins anything of substance in his life.
If.
If.
That's a great way of phrasing it.
Not to concern you, if. if that were to happen, everyone would still remember those passes. They'd be like, oh, yeah. You remember how great Ricky Rubio was. Like, when guys, and I always think of it this way, as much as, like, there's this negative effect of sports media trying to emulate the bar conversation.
Yeah.
But I think that there's some good things, just because I'm always like, well, there's a lot of stupid conversations that go on in bars, but I've had some good ones too. And if you have a group of, like, really knowledgeable NBA guys sitting around drinking and talking about, like, the best passers, like somebody's going to bring up, like, do you remember how good Ricky Rubio was?
Right.
You know? And, like, do you remember Jason Kidd, like, back in the Phoenix days? Like, that kind of stuff. And when people are talking about dunks, it may not be the best dunk of all time. I don't care about ranking him, neither do you.
Oh, we should talk about that in a second.
But if you're just bringing up guys to be in the conversation, someone's going to bring up, why are we not talking about DeAndre Jordan over Brandon Knight? And everyone's going to go, oh!
Yeah. No, like, that's true. And that's the thing. Like, there are two NBA worlds. I love dissecting weak side three-point defense. I love dissecting the side pick and roll and the pocket pass and, you know, all that stuff. That stuff is fascinating to me, and the more I learn about it, the more I realize I don't know what's going on, the more, like, I thirst for that knowledge. Like, it's just there are parts about the NBA where you realize you don't know. Like, it's a game you've followed your whole life, and yet you hear two scouts talking about it, and it's like a different language. Like, it's just the way the game is spoken about by the people who are involved in the NBA is completely different than how we speak about it. Now, we might end up being right about it, but it's just like it's a different world. And I love that world. I love that, you know, that quest for figuring it out, no matter, like, how futile it is. But there is also that NBA world where a guy gets dunked on that severely, and I'm just like, screw it. Analysis doesn't matter.
No, like, it's just awesomeness.
Advanced stats don't matter. The eye test and legacy and all that crap, that doesn't matter. That the eye test of that dunk, that is the only thing that matters right now. Like, just let it go. Just have fun. Let yourself have fun. Like, you don't need to rank it. We don't need to analyze it. That thing was just awesome. Enjoy it. Like, let it bathe over you like a warm bath. Like, it's just, that is what that dunk was. It's just this, like, visceral moment of incredible athleticism and power. Like, that was just cool.
I don't care that the Clippers have never won anything of substance. I don't care that DeAndre Jordan can't hit free throws. That dunk was awesome. Good night.
Yeah, that's it. Yep, he has a lot of holes in his game. You know what he doesn't have a hole in? That dunk. That dunk was perfect.
You know who has a hole in him?
Yeah, Brandon Knight.
Brandon Knight's soul. Because, God, and just, oh. Oh.
It was cool.
The
like,
impact,
it was just a great.
The fact that he fell and, like.
Yeah, it's a great moment. And there's one shot that I just noticed today. That I'll probably gif is right after the dunk. There's a guy on the baseline that just points at Brandon Knight. It's just a great shot. Like, it's just this old guy who's sitting like one or two rows in, and he just points at Brandon Knight on the ground. Like, it's great. It's very subtle, but it killed me.
See, this is there's like a million reasons why mentally, like, let's say physically, I was gifted enough. Mentally, I could not be an NBA player, because if I was a Pistons teammate, my reaction would be to fall over him and protect him, like, try and shield him, to be like, stop it, he's already dead.
Call for the trainer, bring a blanket, we need to cover him up,
we need milk and cookies. Brandon Knight needs milk and cookies.
That would have been hilarious, though, if, like, Charlie Villanueva just walked up to him afterward, like, a minute later, and just, like, rubbed his back. Just like, are you okay, buddy?
It's okay. You're gonna get through this. We're gonna get through this together. And then, like, if I were Knight, I would retire. Like, I'd just be like, I'm done.
And the thing, like, think about, like, all of the the crowd, like, it's mainly Lakers crowds, but, like, even, like, the Clipper crowd now is getting wealthier and a little more boring and stuff. And, you know, that's just kind of how, like, those lower-level seats, like, they've just become so expensive that you get a different crowd than what we used to get in there. And it's understandable. Like, that's just supply and demand, and that's how it goes, and it's a place to be seen now and all that stuff.
Not Memphis, but
Memphis is its own world. But with that crowd, like, that crowd lost it. Like, everyone in that crowd lost it. Didn't matter what their status was, why they were there to be seen or to enjoy a game or whatever. Like, that was a cool moment, and everyone in that crowd, like, in a year, you're going to have 80,000 people saying they were at that game. But that night, like, those people who were actually at the game, they get to say, yeah, I was there when DeAndre Jordan murdered somebody on the court.
These are the really great moments, and the dunks especially. So usually on a dunk like that, it's, oh, and there's like a 4 second of celebration, and then everyone kind of goes back to their nachos. And that's normal, because like the game's going, it's still going on. You watch the video and you watch the game, and the game is being continued to be played, and people are still being quiet and murmuring and talking to themselves and checking their phones about it.
Yeah, there's just like this constant buzz in the crowd throughout the rest of the game, which is cool.
They're like completely distracted, like, we can't pay attention to this game anymore. Like,
yeah.
Like, nothing else matters now.
And it ended up being a 32-point game.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it was a blowout, and it's still, people were, like, still buzzing in the arena. Like, that's something that doesn't happen that often. Like, that was a Mozgov moment, that was a Perkins moment, like, that's stuff that we see all the time. Well, not all the time. That's stuff we see when those great plays happen. Like, that's just, that was that one of those moments. And a lot of them happen with the Clippers now, which is cool.
So, great moment, great night. Thank you, DeAndre Jordan. We'll miss you, Brandon.
I he had such a promising career.
He really did.
I feel bad for him.
Somebody said last night he was a good man.
He was a good man.
A lot of fun games out yesterday. And over the weekend, really.
A lot of fun games. Thunder Celtics was actually surprisingly fun, even though it wasn't that close at the end.
They hung.
Yeah,
they were right there. And that's kind of the difference between Boston now and Boston 2 years ago is, like, Boston can hang, and Boston can you know, keep you honest and be right there, and then they just don't have enough to beat teams like the Thunder. So.
And that, you know, I love them. But that crossover Kevin Durant did on KG.
Oh, yeah.
That was rude. Like, if I was Kevin Durant's mother, I would make him write an apology. Like, a handwritten apology and deliver it in person.
If you were DeAndre Jordan's mother, would you do the same thing?
No. I would troll the funeral.
You call that young man. You tell him.
No, I would make him his favorite meal. I would treat him like he was going to death row. What's your last meal? That's what you get.
Let's talk Lakers real quick.
Yes.
So we didn't have a chance to talk about this, but I'm getting a little bothered because, well, I'm not. It's odd. I don't mind taking the aggregate and saying, like, look, they have this record since the All-Star break. It's like 15-6 or whatever. And they are winning significantly more games than they have lost. They're 2 games over .500. And I tried to write that a lot this weekend to be like, they are back. They are right. You know, they're now in eighth for the playoff seedings. And Utah continues to melt down. They've got some. They have Detroit tonight. So
yeah,
you know, they've got a good chance of improving.
They're facing a Pistons team that's in mourning.
Right. You know, they're down a man.
Yeah.
So, but. Like, the Toronto win got a lot of heat and, like, attention.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't really, if you're a Lakers fan, it's fine, because you should cheer every win. Like, you just have, like, when the Grizzlies are terrible, which will be soon again, and they win, I'll still be like, oh, that's nice, they won. I'll be happy about that. But I have a hard time being like, this is proof that they're back when they needed double-digit comebacks against New Orleans and Toronto. Huge, late, double-digit comebacks against New Orleans and Toronto. In the same month, they needed a massive comeback against the Bobcats. Not this calendar month, but like a month ago.
Yeah.
These are concerning signs to me. Now, the Bulls win was legitimately very good to me, despite the fact that the Bulls were without Heinrich Rose and Taj Gibson. It's still a good win. But I always try and think about, it's hard to get out, and I admit this, it's hard to get out of thinking about them as the Lakers and not as any other team. Because I look at, if this were the Utah Jazz and they had double-digit comebacks against lottery teams and then beat, controlled the Bulls at home without Rose, Heinrich, and Gibson, what's our reaction? Our reaction is, you're not very good.
Right.
You're better. You're not the dumpster fire you were 2 months ago. But there's still a lot of reason to be like, this is not, these signs are not as promising as they may seem.
Well,
being too harsh there?
Here's the problem I have, is that expectations, especially preseason expectations, kind of color the season. And that's really a dumb thing. Like, preseason expectations are what I would call a necessary incompetence, where you are guessing what is going to happen over the next 9 months, over, what is it, 1,230 games plus playoffs. Like, you are guessing before you know any of the major injuries or the majority of the major injuries, timetables, coaches firing, stuff like that. It's all it is a guess. If you get something right, you guessed correctly. You didn't know something was going to happen. If you get something wrong, you guessed incorrectly. Like, there is no knowledge of what is going to happen in the coming season. And we all guessed that the Lakers were going to be awesome, right? Like, the majority of that, yes, there are some people, like, I know millions of people now said, oh, I knew they weren't going to be that good, but a lot of people were picking them championship, Western Conference Finals, whatever. Preseason. And then we saw a coach get fired. We saw an interim coach. We saw a new coach hired. We saw injuries. Like, there's all this stuff that has affected them. We saw pieces not working. We saw Dwight Howard's back suck. We saw his shoulder suck. Like, we saw him be terrible. Like, all this stuff has happened, and you kind of have to divorce yourself. Like, not that the season hasn't, up to this point, hasn't mattered, but it's definitely different than what we expected. And I think you have to get rid of those, well, everyone thought they were going to be title contenders, and they're not title contenders, so they suck. It's not really true anymore. You know, like, I mean, that fact is true, but, like, it doesn't matter at this point. What matters is that, yeah, they've lost some frustrating games, and they've needed double-digit comebacks against teams they shouldn't need double-digit comebacks against if you believe in those preseason expectations still. And that's
not even so much for that. I'm more talking of, I guess it's... how do we measure success based off of potential? Because I do think it's fair, because we do this a lot in terms of, we have different expectations for a team like Charlotte than we do for, and not preseason, but now. Like, we have different expectations night in and night out, and then looking at the playoffs. Like, look at the playoffs, you and I have dramatically different expectations for a team like Milwaukee versus a team like Oklahoma City.
Sure.
And the Lakers are built like a team like Oklahoma City in terms of the star power and ability.
Yeah, but here's the thing is, and it's especially the case with the Lakers, and this was the case with the Miami Heat a couple years ago, is whenever a team doesn't take a bad team seriously and they get down early in a game, or they need to come back in a game, or they even lose that game.
Yeah, but we're past that point.
No, we're not. We get
they
to,
don't get to do that anymore.
No, they do. They're an NBA team. That happens. What, regardless of what we think they are, of the mystique of the Lakers, that happens. Even if
they know that they need to win every game. They know they have no margin for error.
No, that's not how humans work. Humans see something like, I mean, there are very few people in this country where they see a task and go, I'm gonna go 100% all the time at that. You see nights where you think you can take that night off or really not give a ton of effort, and it can be a stupid decision, but it's still a decision. It happens. And it's not to take away credit from the opposing team, but no one's taking the Bobcats seriously. Like, they're just not. So for the Lakers,
I would be more tempted to go with you on this if it wasn't for the fact that when you watch the game, it doesn't feel like it. It doesn't feel like the Lakers are not taking them seriously. It feels like they're getting their ass kicked for 44 minutes.
Yes, but now we're pretending to know what is going on inside their mind. I realize I just did that, but why can't it work the other way? Like, that's just stuff that happens. And if they win the game, I don't really care how they win the game. Like, if they need a double-digit comeback, that's frustrating, and yet still they got the double-digit comeback. Like, they pulled it together and figured it out. And just because it's a Lakers uniform...
Context. We're all about context here. It's not just about winning. You gotta, it's about how you execute and how you and like what your level of play is.
Sure, but they're not going to have to...
It indicates that they're going to get their ass kicked in the first round.
That doesn't... If they had blown out the Raptors, you would still feel that way.
I would feel better. I honestly...
There's no way one game colors your perception that much.
I'm willing to start believing in this team, but I have a hard... I guess it's one where... These wins don't color me either way, but I don't think... I guess I'm more saying it doesn't lead me to believe that they've turned a corner.
They've absolutely turned a corner. They need to turn another corner if they want to win a title, but they've absolutely turned a corner.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I guess what I'm saying is there's a difference between no longer being terrible and being an actual legitimately dangerous team. And like I've been saying they're going to make the playoffs for 2 months. I've held to that. And every radio interview I do, that's the I get that question. Are the Lakers going to make the playoffs? And I've stuck to it because I'm like, I need to be consistent.
Right.
So I've said, no matter what, I've been like, I said, if they get to April 1st and they're still like 5 games under, then I'm going to start believing they're not going to make it. But I was like, I really think that they're going to end up getting there. And they're getting there. And even I'm starting to look at it. I'm like, they're only 2 games back at the six, and if they get into a 3-6 with the Clippers, and you've got the Clippers' inexperience versus the kind of playoff experience that the Lakers have, and the matchups and the way it works out, like, there's no reason to think that the Lakers can't win that series. There's reason to believe that they won't, but there's no reason to think that they can't.
Right.
But on the other hand, I'm also like, I can't sit there and be like, well, just look at the Raptors game and look what they did there. And I'm like, no, they were down double digits to the Raptors.
But here's the thing. They're not going to play the Raptors in the playoffs. They're not going to play the Bobcats. They're not going to play the Jazz. They're not going to play any of these teams. I think a good way to measure them is how they play the better teams. They're
losing to those better teams consistently.
Right. They're typically competitive for most of the game. They end up losing. That's probably how the first round of the playoffs is going to go for them. So I don't understand why we freak out about that. Like, that's where I feel like you divorce yourself of the expectations in the preseason. That clearly wasn't the team you thought it was going to be. So now adjust your perception.
Like, who they are is a not bad, kind of tough team that's probably going to lose in the first round because they're not as good as the best teams.
Yeah, they're a playoff team. I mean, they're a bottom of the top eight playoff team.
I get where you're coming from. It's a good point. I just don't necessarily agree because I think you can judge based off of, like, I think it's impossible to look at this team and not be like, no, this is a failure. I mean, it just is. Like,
of course it's a failure.
There's too much talent and money invested for this not to be, like, this team needs to be a title contender.
Of course they should be, and they need it, but that doesn't mean that you just discount anything they're doing now because they're not going to win a title. Like, they have shown growth. They've shown a sense of responsibility.
Dwight looks much better.
Yeah, Dwight is playing defensive rebound.
I crushed Dwight in a quote translator yesterday.
That's because he says stupid things.
Yeah. But, I mean, he legitimately does look better. I've said consistently this is the best season I've ever seen from Kobe. It just is. I've never seen a better season.
I don't know about ever, but...
Even the 06 seasons, it was volume shooting. Like, he's so much more efficient this year. Right, he's so much smarter. He's working so much more in the flow of the offense and creating high-quality looks. He's not doing as much of the fadeaway 35-footer to try and prove he can. Like, he's taking a lot fewer heat checks. He's getting to the rim. Like,
no, I agree. He's also a horrendous defender. So I'll take, like, that 03-04 Kobe over this one.
Fair enough. Nash has moments, but he's largely, like, I am kind of sad that...
I'm a little worried about how he's used, and I don't blame Kobe for this. I actually blame Nash. I think he's way too just passive. And I don't even know what passive is. It's like almost just like – it's almost like apathy, you know?
Yeah.
Not that he doesn't care about winning or anything like that. It's just like I don't think he cares about fitting in right now. I think maybe he believes they're good enough to where it doesn't matter if he fits in every game. But it's just – I don't know. It's this weird dynamic.
He's not bursting in the sets like he did in Phoenix.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and
there are flashes, but it's not enough to where you think, oh, he's headed in this direction.
I get annoyed with the whole fun thing, especially from Dwight Howard, but that's partially because I think Dwight's all about, like, the fun off court. I think with Nash, like, he legitimately loves playing basketball, and I'm not sure how much fun being in this environment as the being part of the big star team and all of that. I'm not sure it resonates as much with him. I think
it probably doesn't.
It's partially personnel, because you could tell, like, yesterday he made, like, a beautiful looping move, drew three defenders, jump past the sidearm, kick out to the corner, meta world peace.
Yeah.
it's like, there's a point where he's just like, damn it.
I mean, Ron, I actually think Ron's played well.
Yeah, well, he's played, I thought he was really good for a while, and then I started looking at some of his midseason splits, and it's real inconsistent, I think, is the best way to say it.
Sure, but I mean, he generally is. I've been impressed with his defense. I thought his defense yesterday against Carlos Boozer was fantastic, and whether people think Boozer sucks or not, like, he's a good player.
You still have to play him.
You still have to play him, and Ron defended him perfectly.
Yeah.
And he worked his tail off, keeping him off the boards for the most part. I mean, he ended up with 10 rebounds, but Ron did a lot of work early against Boozer.
A lot of hot teams right now. Memphis is hot. Nuggets are blistering hot. The Miami Heat are doing okay, you know.
Heat have they've put together a decent stretch of basketball.
Like there's no way we can make a joke, like we can make a like underrate joke, an understated joke enough. We can't understate it enough to make it funny.
Here's the thing. I'm not an overreactionary person. Last night I literally went through the schedule and thought, I think this team can get to 27 or 28 wins in a row. They're at 18 right now, and there are a couple of tough matchups here and there. The Boston game will be huge. I think the San Antonio game down the road like puts them at like 31 or something like that in a row. But it's like a soft enough schedule where this conversation probably jinxes them and they lose the next game. But it's a soft enough schedule, and they're good enough right now, obviously, that it's not crazy to think they can't get into the high 20s.
Yeah, I think mid-20s is a reasonable expectation. I think high, as much as you can expect this. And then high 20s is, they got a shot at it, and I think 30-plus is, well, it's just not going to happen because just nobody does that.
Right, yeah. It's always one of those things of like, hey, can they win 70 games in the season this year? And it's like, well, one team's done it, so I'm going to guess no.
Yeah.
One team's broken the 30-win mark in a row, the 30 straight wins. I'm going to guess no, they don't. But the fact that I'm thinking about it kind of scares me.
So remember when I said that Golden State has problems?
Oh, boy.
Golden State's got problems.
Big time. I don't even know how to like sugarcoat it anymore.
I mean, I was worried. I was worried when they lost the Wizards game. That was when I was like, oh, no. And everybody, it's like, well, yeah, they're going home. I'm like, you lost to the Wizards, okay? I don't care where you're playing the Wizards. When you lose to the Wizards, you have serious issues.
They're
still having problems out at their home.
Yes, yeah, they're the only playoff team with a negative differential.
Oh, that's not good.
The only playoff team in the West. The Bucks also have a negative differential in the East.
That's just Monta, though. Monta, like, automatically. They're handicapped just by having Monta. Despite him, it's a have it all tax.
Oh yeah, the have it all tax that'll get you.
You know, it's crazy. Like Dallas and Portland are only 4.5 out. That's what's kind of, they're only like 4.5. They're 4 games out of the 7th seed.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think Golden State necessarily falls out of the playoffs. I think that I think the teams that we have in right now are who we're going to see in the playoffs.
I think I agree with you, but I've talked to a lot of people lately that think Golden State's just going to flat out fall out of the top 8, and I want to think it's ridiculous, but the way they're playing, it's one surge for. I mean, Dallas is 1-3 in a row. They're only 4 games under 500. They're 5 games behind the Warriors. It's not crazy to think about. Like, I don't think it'll happen, but it's a decent conversation.
God, that'd be crazy.
That would be really crazy.
I mean, I don't know. You can either argue that Rick Carlisle dragged that team to the playoffs, or you can argue that Rick Carlisle, you know, struggled so much with getting this roster to make sense for most of the year.
Yeah.
And then finally able to get him in. But
Vince Carter, by the way, has quietly had an awesome year.
He's been really great. He's been absolutely terrific this year.
Yeah.
He was good. He's been good for his entire Mavs run. Like, I like Vince Carter the veteran more than I like Vince Carter in his prime.
Yeah.
So. Although he was great in New Jersey. He was really great in New Jersey.
He was great in Toronto. He's a that guy, above average player. I'll say it.
You and I both wrote about Ty Lawson over the weekend.
Yes.
I wrote about him on Thursday night? Yeah, Thursday night.
Yeah, that sounds right.
At like 2 o'clock in the morning and about... It was kind of funny because of the whole conversation that he had with George Carl. We talked about that on Friday, but then you wrote about him again on Saturday. Only 2 teams in the NBA have lost just 3 games at home, and that's Miami and the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah,
Denver is as...
They've won 13 in a row at home, I believe.
And here's the really thing. Here's a really crazy thing. And Carl was talking about this too, where some of their road losses, I mean, they're 14 and 19 on the road, which is not good. But three of those losses were before the All-Star break when the NBA decided to, oh, we've screwed you over with the early season and we're going to get you one more time on the way out of the All-Star break.
Yeah.
They scheduled them for a long road trip before the All-Star break when everyone's making plans and no one cares. And then they suffered injuries. They were missing Gallo and Iguodala.
Yeah.
For, I think, all for three of those games. So then you're talking about, you know, what, 17 and 16.
Yeah.
So,
I usually do it anyway. A quick T-Wolves tangent.
Yeah.
One, only 9 healthy guys. 20% of their starting lineup is healthy and playing right now, so that sucks. That's been their season so far. But Rick Adelman was furious with the schedule last night in terms of they had a road game in Denver Saturday night. Daylight savings took away an hour, and then they had an early 6 o'clock game on Sunday. Like, he was legit, like, he mentioned it a few times, and wouldn't blame the loss on it, but said it definitely was a factor, but was furious that that was their schedule, which I thought, I never factored in the whole daylight savings thing with teams traveling and stuff, but that's got to be something for guys that need rest as much as they do on a back-to-back. Like, that is something. And then they have 6 games in the next 8 days, I believe, and they don't know if they're going to get any of those unhealthy players back. So 6 games, 8 days, 9 healthy players, 20% of their starting lineup. Back to the Nuggets.
Season of woe.
Yeah.
I'm hesitant to bring this up. I only want to talk about the Carl reaction. I don't want to talk about the call because you and I disagree on it, and I don't think it's worth talking about. It's a charge call in a meaningless game.
Yes.
But George Carl's reaction over the weekend was one of the most amazing things of the season.
That was another thing Rick Adelman was confused about, because Adelman got a tech in that game for arguing.
Yeah.
It was like, I don't understand. I think I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, I don't understand why George does what he does and doesn't get a tech, and then I say what I say. What?
I thought he got a tech on it.
Adelman seemed to think he didn't.
I think I remember the free throw.
Really? Well, now I don't know.
It would be confusing. I mean, maybe he didn't. Maybe I just saw the free throw and wasn't paying attention to the people standing around him.
It was just a constant wave of sadness to me, so I didn't really... there's a lot about that game I don't remember. Carl did have a tech for the game, so maybe Adelman just didn't notice it.
Yeah, no, he got the tech, because I remember Hastings, the Nuggets announcers, being like, well, Carl's going to get a tech here, and probably, and rightfully so.
Maybe I misunderstood Adelman, and he was talking about how they're of equal value. Because they both got one tech, maybe he thought Carl should have gotten thrown out. But regardless, back
Carl
to the reaction.
Carl should have gotten two. Carl should have gotten two for throwing his own player.
He pushed Wilson Chandler.
And then did you see Wilson's tweet after the game?
Yeah, he did. He's like, I should dress in all black because
go meet George Carl outside.
Yeah, George Carl isn't about that life.
That was a great joke. I texted I sent the gift that I pulled of it. To Ben Hockman of the Denver Post, and he actually showed it to Carl after the game. Apparently, he just laughed and walked away. Just can't believe he shoved Wilson Chandler. It didn't
look like Wilson Chandler was walking over to like subdue George Carl. Like, he was just walking to the sideline.
I can't believe JaVale picked Ricky. That was the most amazing thing of that game.
That was an impressive thing. Like, Ricky tried to get him with a crossover, like a little hesitation crossover, and JaVale picked him clean, took the other way, and got a tiptoe dunk. Like, that was he didn't really jump on that dunk. I don't think he had much balance on it, but still, he's got go-go gadget arm, so he's still able to dunk it.
Yeah, it was like he was dribbling, and then it was like he messed up his legs, and so he just kind of leaned forward. And
yeah.
Which I actually kind of like those. I like the way those look sometimes. But so, yeah, I mean, Denver's red hot. You know, regardless of what you think about their playoff potential, when we talked a lot about that, yeah. They and Memphis, I think, have a really good shot at either. I think one of them has a really, very good shot at taking over the 3 spot.
I've had this conversation a couple times over the last few days, and maybe I've said it on here, but my ideal playoff matchups in the West for the first round right now are Spurs Warriors, Thunder Rockets, Clippers Lakers, and Nuggets Grizzlies. And I think the Nuggets Grizzlies won't be my favorite series, but it's the most intriguing series to me because they couldn't be two different teams. Like, they couldn't be any more different than they are.
It'll be funny. I assume that NBA TV will pick the 4-5 East matchup like they always do for their requisite buried no one cares about series.
Right.
But Memphis-Denver, in reality, has very low casual fan crossover potential.
Yeah, that's true.
But it has, like, because, I mean, you know, I guess TNT has the East, right?
That sounds correct to me.
No, it's mixed in the first round. That's right. They only separate after they get out of the first round.
Yeah.
Whoever gets that Clippers-Lakers series, if that happens, is going to be rolling in dough.
If there's a Nets-Knicks series and you get both of those, you just start your own island. You start your own country.
The rest of our like hardcore fans like us are going to be like, yeah, but Clippers Grizzlies or Denver Nuggets Grizzlies. Because, I mean, and I said this on Denver radio last week. I talked about how I was like, look, if you wind up in that 4-5, that's your season. Like, you better win that series because you're not getting past it because you're going to be too exhausted.
Right.
No one's surviving that 4-5.
Right.
Like, you're going to be exhausted. You're going to travel the next day to a team that's been resting for 5 days, unless it's Spurs Lakers.
And God, I hope that 4-5 goes 7 just because it's gonna be really good basketball.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating combination. And there's a lot of ways to think you can think that maybe it could come apart, like Denver couldn't handle the defensive pressure or Memphis simply can't score enough. There's a lot of ways it could fall apart, but the reality is that the offensive power, because the other thing to keep in mind here is Denver's 12th in defense, which is not good, but it's not horrible. We're not talking about, you know, it's a lot different from having an 18 or 20 ranked defense. And they can defend a bad offense well enough, and Memphis' defense is good enough to slow down a really great offense. So now you've got this really great tug of war between the two teams.
And the whole Fareed-Zebo matchup is really, if Zebo does the work, he'll dominate.
Yeah.
Because he does have the ability to keep Fareed off the boards, but if he doesn't do all the work he needs to, Fareed just capitalizes on whatever mistake you make.
And that Marc Gasol versus Kosta Kubas and JaVale McGee.
Yeah, like that'll just be a fun interior matchup to see, like this jumping jack tried to get like rooted out by this boulder.
And then you know you got Ty Lawson versus Mike Conley, and Conley's a very sound defender, but he has trouble with speed, which obviously is Lawson's strength. And then you've got Tony Allen being crazy. Tony Allen and Iguodala kind of measure each other out.
Yeah,
that's what's funny is they'll probably wind up being. They'll probably put Iguodala. I think where they put him. They'll probably they might put him on Conley, honestly, to pressure him, and then they might put Tony Allen on Ty.
Yeah.
And then you know Tayshaun and Gallo definitely equal each other. Not equal each other, but that's they'll match up. Gallo will win that convincingly. But
I don't know about convincingly.
Ooh.
I think Tayshaun can defend him well.
So faith in the old man.
I have faith in the system. I think they would throw enough looks between Allen and Tayshaun at Gallo, where Gallo probably has two or three good games, but I could see him having a couple of really bad games too.
You touched on this in your Lawson piece. He and Gallo had the same problem. The dribble drive in Denver has some issues because of the fact that if your rotation help defense is enough, you get a lot of blocks.
Yeah.
And so they can drive him into help, and either one, Gallo or Lawson, and cause some problems there.
Yeah, that's where you really need Gallo to do two things: hit threes, get to the free throw line.
And this is the one I'm most excited about: Tony Allen versus Corey Brewer.
That'll be fun.
Crazy.
That'll be fun.
That is a lot of crazy right there, all bundled up in a little bit.
So. Perfect example. Andre Miller had that behind the back move and dumped it off to Corey Brewer. Mikal Jalabal, he didn't jump. He ducked out of the way for the Corey Brewer dunk. That's what you got to do, Brandon.
Save yourself.
No one likes a dead hero. live to fight another day. Live to posterize another day.
The name of the podcast. No one likes a dead hero. Let's do games.
Yes, five of them. There's one that two I want to watch. I'm ignoring the other three.
Let's assume the Jazz win and go 2-7 since the trade deadline.
I don't understand why you keep throwing out that number.
I know you don't. We're not going to agree on it. We just need to let go. We're not going to agree on it. We just need to let it go.
I don't understand why in the past you've been a fan of teams keeping their options open, but now you're not.
Well, partly I was on the fence about it, and then I talked to a personnel guy for another team last week who really kind of convinced me that it was a terrible move. Now, that's not surprising that a competitor would think that Utah made a bad move, but it doesn't really behoove him anything to tell me about it off the record. So there are indications that they are unlikely to get as much. Maybe their options are not as extensive as previously thought.
I would just like to know the trade that they should have made that they turned down. That's what I would like to know before I start grilling them over this.
Fair enough. I do not need to, and I'm going to continue to grill them over it. Warriors are favored by 3 over the Knicks.
I hope that'll be a fun one.
Well, Melo's probably out.
No Melo, no Amari. Damn it, Amari.
Yeah, Amari, we didn't even touch on that.
I've never even been a big Amari fan, but I was enjoying him in this role. Seeing him just like sacrifice his pride for the team and do whatever it took, and he was playing well, and now another one. That sucks.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. And he didn't complain about coming off the bench, and he didn't, you know, he worked on his post game and he worked harder to fit in. Like, he did everything that he was asked to do. He played better defense as much as he can because he's just not able to. He's not skilled or able to.
Right.
But, you know, he did all that and then had this happen. It just really sucks. It was bad because, like, somebody, one of the New York reporters was talking about how he said he was feeling so good, and then the docs find it, and then that's how it happens.
Yeah.
I mean,
who do you like here? You got to like the Warriors, right? Just because it's J.R. Smith versus the world?
I'm taking the Knicks because there's no way that J.R. is not going to win one of these games.
Yeah, that's a good point.
J.R. is going to win one of these. He's already had his two LOL games.
And even one of those was a good game.
Yeah. I mean, he beat the Jazz, but I feel like he's going to have one game where he, like, carries them.
I can't do it. I can't. And this isn't a knock on the Knicks or J.R. Smith. I just can't give up on this Warriors team. I'm trying to.
And you are hanging on to that boat.
I'm trying to, and I'm going to go down with the ship. I'll take the Warriors.
You're like Rose and Titanic hanging on to Jack.
Kicking them off the life preserver. Kicking them off the driftwood.
You're just hanging on to them even though they're clearly dead.
She was not a ride-or-die chick. She'd let him go into the water.
I know. She was like, oh, this is sad. I'm going to save myself now. so long, guy I've known for a day.
Yeah.
The Suns are 8.5-point dogs at home to the Nuggets. I'm taking the Suns.
I could see the Nuggets playing around here and not taking it seriously and making it a close game. But I could also see the Suns being very Sunsy. I'm going to take the Nuggets.
Okay.
Even on the road.
I just, the Suns have...
That's a big number.
The Suns beat Memphis twice. The Suns beat Denver way, way back. Denver's been better about their consistency on the road, but it's still their biggest weak point. And coming out of the Wolves game and they're feeling so good, this team gets too high on itself. So I think that the Suns are going to come through.
Yeah.
Sixers are 6-point dogs at home to the Nets. Sixers played the Heat well last week. They've shown some signs of playing a little bit better, even though they're losing.
Unless Deron Williams has 11 3-pointers in this game, I'm not watching.
Yeah.
I don't.
But he didn't have that. I feel, you know, good on him. Good. Deron had a really great game. It looks better. Everyone's saying that it's his diet, and I'm like, I think it's probably the cortisone. But that's just me.
Sure.
That was funny. Everyone's like, oh, it's that juice diet. I was like, no, it's the fact that he had 6 injections. And they're like, oh, no, it's the platelet therapy. I'm like, it's also the 6 injections.
It's probably the 300 cc's of cortisone wrapping around his veins.
Like, his ankle is more numb than I was in New Orleans over New Year's 5 years ago. Like, it's can't feel anything. You could kick him and wouldn't feel anything.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even care what it is. I like seeing him play well, but it's probably the cortisone.
Probably the cortisone. The Spurs in the game of the night are 2-point favorites at home versus your Oklahoma City Thunder. By the way, I've got a massive feature on Scott Brooks that just went up on CBSSports.com. Make sure to check it out. It took me like a solid 5 hours to get done, so.
Spurs are favored by 2?
Yes.
No Tony Parker. I like the Thunder there. Probably stupidly, but I like the Thunder there.
this one's tough. I mean, not just because of the line, but...
Thunder kind of need this game if they want to...
But they're on the back-to-back.
Yeah, but did they really play that hard yesterday?
And then San Antonio is coming off of, I guess, their last game was that Portland game, so they're going to want to get back. They're going to be focused because that Portland game was a...
Yeah, they got destroyed.
Portland fans were really excited, too. They were like, no, look, we're going to make the playoffs. Like, this is it. This is the start. And then they lost to New Orleans.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's right. No. San Antonio just had... I feel like that's how San Antonio is without Parker, where they can win most of their games, but if they lose, they're going to lose by a gajillion.
Yeah, it kind of all falls apart for them, right?
Right. And what you think, like, this would be a key game for that, but I don't know. This is... You know, it opened at 2.5, and it's down to 2, but...
Oof. Yeah, I think I like the Thunder in this game.
I'm taking San Antonio. I don't know why, but I'm taking San Antonio. I don't have a good reason for it. It's a gut feeling. As Steve McPherson, our good friend, always says, feelings aren't numbers. But
I mean, the Spurs against the Thunder, this could be a trap game. Spurs are going to be in Minneapolis tomorrow night. They're probably going to be focused on that. I think this is a trap game.
Obviously.
They're going to overlook the Thunder because of the Wolves. I can see
they're
that.
Scared of Ricky Rubio. The shadow of Ricky Rubio looms large.
And Greg Steensma.
Are we ever getting Love back?
Yeah. He's going to the doctor this week. Everything is, as far as I've heard, everything is expected to be good news, which means then it's conditioning, and that's like 2 weeks, maybe three weeks.
Well, that puts him back right about when he wanted to. He wanted to return sometime that last week. But you know, I bet his condition doesn't take as long too, because he was in really great like shape.
Yeah, he looks like he's in great shape right now. I mean, just compared to how he looked when he came back from the first handbreak, he looks great. He did a polar plunge.
Derrick Rose, man.
Yeah, Derrick Rose.
Hamstrings.
It's just it wouldn't be such a weird situation if the Bulls didn't seem to be acting so oddly here. Like the Bulls seem like they're up to something, but there's nothing they could be up to.
Well, explain it to me, because everyone's talking about that, and I don't really see what they've done. Like, all they've done is said, like, well, he's cleared to play, because, you know, I don't necessarily know that that's a bad thing to say, like, well, he's cleared to play. I don't feel like you're putting pressure on him, because it's like, nobody said we expect Derek to return. They're just saying, well, no, like, if he's able to go, but he doesn't feel like he's able to, so he's not going.
I don't know. I just feel like saying, well, he's cleared to play.
Is the expectation on him?
Yeah. It puts it entirely on him. And maybe it is entirely on him, and it should be. Because he does have this set of standards he has to come back to. His own set of standards that he clearly believes he has to come back to. And that's admirable. But I don't know. It just, for some reason, it feels like they're throwing him under the bus. Or at least like saying, stand here in this bus line.
Right.
And it could just be myself and other people reading way too much into it. But I don't know. There's a weird feeling about that.
Well, Bulls fans are really worried about that. I've seen the guys that I know and the bloggers are really worried about it. And I will say this. Like, the media hasn't come out, outside of a few guys, the media hasn't come out and been like, no, that's not what's going on here. They've kind of been like, well, so maybe there is some indications inside the organization that people are kind of like, okay, it's time to come back.
And the updates only come from him, right? That's weird.
Well, that's part of it. I think that's a big part of this is it's just Tibbs. Like, I think that's a large part of this. Tibbs is never going to be, you know, well, let's just sit down and have a chat about it. He just grouses out something about how Derek's going to return. When Derek's going to return, that's it.
Yeah, which is really probably how he should be. It just feels like usually you have other members in the organization leaking stuff out. And maybe there's nothing to leak out. I don't know. It's just weird. It's a weird situation. It feels like a soap opera. It feels like an episode of...
I don't like that he's now developed hamstring issues. I mean, it's not necessarily to be not unexpected. It's just like, you don't want to hear about there being complication upon complication upon complication. And man, like, this is the worst ACL that... It's this really traumatic injury. This is the worst one I've seen in a while in terms of the reaction to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's just because he's such a good player. Like, we don't usually see it with great players, right?
Yeah, but I don't know, because, like, I mean, just the way that, like, Perkins got back, and Shumpert got back, and Rubio got back, and it's horrific, and it takes all this pain, but it's not, like, this unfathomable ordeal.
Right, but Rubio came back and then sat out 5 or 6 games with back spasms that developed because he was overcompensating.
Yeah.
And if Rose is avoiding that and the hamstring burning is his equivalent of the back spasms, they both missed time for it. He's just taking the recovery road a little bit differently. He's just doing more sightseeing on it.
Yeah, that's a fair analogy there. You know who's buried by the side of the road?
Brandon Knight.
Brandon Knight.
God bless him.
All right, thanks, Zach.
He will be missed. Thank you. Yeah.